station promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
And now it's time for the best morning show on radio, broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio in Studio City, California. Get ready for Sam in the Morning.
Good morning and welcome to Thursday. Can you hear me? Yeah. Thursday, June 13th. How are you? Thank you for joining us. Hi,
good
Mia.
Good morning.
Are you with us today?
I am with you.
Yeah, you are. With all your Hello Kitty stuff, I was telling you about it. And I think listeners should know.
What, about my Hello Kitty obsession?
Yes, yes. You should tell us all about it.
Oh, so. Gosh. I can go on forever with Hello Kitty.
Really?
Well, no, okay.
What's
well, starting
to say
from
about
the
it?
Beginning, though, okay? It all started when, I think it was for Christmas, my aunt got me a book, and I was really young, I was just a little kid, and it was a Hello Kitty book, and it was about how Hello Kitty gets her first yellow umbrella, and she wants it to rain so bad, and she goes to school without it, and then it rains, and she's so sad, but then when she gets out of school, her mom surprises her with her umbrella, and her, you know,
wow,
rain boots,
so
and everything.
Wow, so there's a story behind
and
this.
That, yeah, and then she, you know, splashes in the puddles, and, you know, plays in the rain on her way home, and it's all a happy story, and I loved it
and
as a kid.
And you can relate to that.
And I never grew out of it. So, I mean, it's funny, because they make Hello Kitty in everything, like clothing and pillows and Band-Aids and Ziploc baggies and, like, everything you can think of.
They're oversaturated.
They make Hello Kitty.
Yeah.
And so it's like if you think about, you know, every, like, birthday, Christmas, you know, since I was young, because everybody knows I like it.
Right.
Everyone buys it for me. So, you know.
Easy to buy for you.
Yeah. As you can infer, I've acquired quite the amount of Hello Kitty memorabilia throughout my lifetime.
So what's the strangest thing you have of Hello Kitty?
The strangest thing?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Well, I saw your keychain, but that's not...
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
it's huge, though.
Strange. I mean, like, in my car, like, my rearview mirror is Hello Kitty.
Really?
Yes. It's like a rearview mirror. It goes over my existing rearview mirror. And it's actually safer because it's bigger, so I can see a little bit more. But it has the little classic, like, bow on the, you know, on the top corner of it with, like, some little Hello Kitty
to remind
icons.
You that you love Hello Kitty.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's all over my car, too. My seat cover, steering wheel cover, floor mats.
God. That's an obsession.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it is. Oh, yeah. I'll be the first to admit, like, I know I have a problem. I have a Hello Kitty
problem. Well, I don't know if
problem.
It's a problem. You know? It doesn't interfere with
like
your
it.
Life. You know?
No, it doesn't. I have a lot of it. So
that's
definitely
funny.
My thing.
Yeah.
But
so how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much.
Nice.
The sun's out early, kinda.
Yeah.
And I guess your sports team won. Who was it now? Tell
oh
me because
my gosh.
I'm totally
yes.
not into sports.
The Chicago Blackhawks. This is like the Stanley Cup Finals. This was game one against the Boston Bruins.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into triple overtime
really?
Last night. Yes.
You watched the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
really?
I just can't. Oh my gosh, I'm obsessed. I love it.
Really?
I'm just like my heart's beating so fast. Even as I'm talking about it, I'm like reliving that moment. And it's, you know, I know it's kind of tough for the LA Kings fans to be hearing this right now because we just beat them out in the last the last round prior to.
I don't know that many people in LA really care about hockey. You know.
You know, I don't think so either. I mean, unless it's like the people that all of a sudden care because they won the Stanley Cup last year.
Right.
And it's just funny to me because when I first moved out here, I actually went to a Kings game. And now going to a Blackhawks game, if you're in the front row against the glass, you better believe you are like standing up, banging on that glass the whole damn game,
really?
Like every chance you get, right? So they're playing, who are they playing? I want to say, it's the Phoenix Coyotes, actually. And I think Phoenix scored one goal, and that was it. It was the most quiet, boring game ever. I was so excited. I thought I'd be in the front row. I thought I'd be standing up, banging on the glass. Everyone's looking at me like, sit down. What are you doing? Everyone's looking at me like I'm nuts. And I'm like, well, it's a hockey game. And I look behind me and all the people are just, it was just crickets. You know, everyone's kind of twiddling their thumbs and chilling out. And I'm like, wow, Los Angeles, way to go.
I'm telling you, we're not into hockey here, you know? I mean, the weather just doesn't lend itself for ice sports, you
right.
know?
Right, yeah. So, which still amazes me that they won the Stanley Cup last year. That so just blows my mind. I mean,
oh, the Kings did?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they did.
I didn't know that.
They did.
Yeah,
so
it shows you how much I care about sports. Do you have any other sports that you like? Like football?
Oh, yeah.
Baseball?
I'm a huge Bears fan. I'm actually a Ravens fan, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a buddy of mine, Brendan Iambadejo, he used to play for the Bears, and then he was playing for the Ravens. He no longer is, but he got, you know, he's got a Super Bowl ring and everything from last season. So that's pretty exciting. Yeah. I was really happy when the Ravens won.
Yeah, I'm sure. I didn't stop hearing about the Ravens when Brigetta was here. She was from Maryland. And she would talk about this like there's no tomorrow. I'm like, enough of the Ravens already, you know?
Yeah, I don't blame her. I'm the same way. But
they're a good team, though, huh?
Oh,
I mean,
they get
to the playoffs and everything. And
they're a great team,
But then they go to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, well, they won the Super Bowl.
They won the Super Bowl. That's right. What do I know? I'm telling you, Mia. I don't know. I used to be into football a lot, you know, but not anymore, man. I don't watch TV. I don't watch sports, you know. It's like, let me hang out, let me read, let me talk to people. You know, I don't know about just watching sports. Sometimes I like it with a group of people, you know, beer and munchies and stuff
Yeah, no,
like
for
that.
Me,
that's
I can
fun.
Do it, like, by myself, in my house, on my couch, wearing, you know, whatever jersey of whatever team's playing that
you
I'm
wear
into.
You wear the jersey even when you're alone.
Oh, heck yes. Heck yes. I'll never forget when I first moved here, and it was the year that actually the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup. Uh-huh. I was rocking my Hossa jersey and I was driving around. I didn't know anybody. And then I pulled over into like this Irish pub that I saw had TVs. I'm like, listen, you guys are going to put on this game. And I sat there. They turned up the volume. I ordered a big ass Cobb salad and I just sat there, watched the game. And I'm so glad I did because that was the game that we won the Stanley Cup. And I was jumping up and down like a maniac. These people are trying to enjoy their dinner. They're looking at me like, this girl is nuts. And I'm like, oh my God.
The only fan in there. Huh?
Oh yeah, the only fan in there. Wow. We were playing like, I don't know, we were playing like the Flyers or something. So there was nobody else really like paying attention.
Yeah,
so
nobody cared.
Yeah. So, but that was I'm all about it for sure. And the Bulls. And I'm a Clippers fan too, actually.
Really? So you like
basketball.
All the friggin' teams?
Yes, I do. I like all the friggin' teams. Oh, and the Cubbies, even though we're just so terrible most of the time. I'm still, I'll always be a big Cubs fan.
Yeah.
My first game, I actually sang the national anthem in seventh inning stretch.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, after that, I was like, okay, that's it. I'm a Cubs fan for life.
There
this
you
is
go.
My thing.
Yeah. So how did they pick you to do that?
That was through American Girl, when I was in the American Girl show. Back
What's
in
American Girl show?
Chicago.
You never told
they
us
have
about it.
I think I might have, like, my first time a long time. Well, not that long when I was here, my first time. It's a show, and it's actually in, we have the stores here. Mm. But originally, it started off in Chicago. But it's like the dolls, you know, the American Girl dolls.
Right.
I don't expect you to know anything
no,
about that.
No, I don't know that.
But it was a really popular thing, like, you know, when I was young. And it still is, but there's a store at the Grove now. But before New York had a store and a show, before L.A., it was only in Chicago. So we would have people from all over the world come to see. And it was professional theater. I was on contract.
Wow.
You know, I had to keep my hair the same. I had, to, you know, like they were very, very strict. But it was an amazing, amazing experience.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, I could.
So they picked you from that?
Yeah, through that. Yeah, they have American Girl Day at Wrigley Field every year. So all the dads bring their daughters and they bring their American Girl dolls. And the first, like, however many, you know, people that get there, however, I don't know how they pick those numbers, they get like a free like little Cubbies shirt for their American Girl doll, yeah, or like a hat or something, some kind of little trinket. So it was like American Girl Day at Wrigley Field, right, and that's how, you know, I got picked to,
wow,
sing the national anthem.
There you go. All right. You win a lot of contests. That's a good thing. You know, that's a good sign.
I just try to be, you know, yeah, good at what I do, and, you know,
yeah,
hope that it gets me someplace.
That's true. So you sing too?
Yeah,
really?
I do. Yeah, it was,
we'll
in
have
that
to check
show
you out at karaoke sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's been a minute since I've really sang, but I'm sure it's like riding a bike, you
yeah
know?
That's true. I guess, yeah.
I don't think I forgot how to sing, but no.
Yeah.
No, I'm okay, you know. I
yeah
do all right. I made a living off of it, you know. That's
yeah
how I put myself through college.
Oh, really? Singing?
Oh, yeah. I saved all my money with doing all the professional theater shows that I did.
Yeah, the theater. So yeah, you were singing there, too, in the
yeah
shows?
Yeah, it was like a musical
musicals
type deal.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It was super fun.
Yeah. Well, sounds good to me. Are you getting ready for the next Pieces show? Do
yes
you get, do you guys
yes
have to rehearse
again?
Yes, I
have. Got, oh, yeah, we'll start rehearsing. And so I know they have... It's different now being, you know, having already been in
mm-hmm
a show.
Right.
Because, you know, I remember like having to go to rehearsals all the time, and I'd look around and it was always like the new girls. I'm like, where are the rest of the girls? And now I'm in that boat where
right
I hardly ever have to go to rehearsal up until like, you know, towards the end where they need everybody to be there. So it's kind of nice being like,
yeah,
oh yeah, I don't really have to go to rehearsal. I've already done the show.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
but yeah, no, it's coming up. Super excited. It's
yeah
the 21st of
yeah
this month.
We talked the show to death. You guys should know by now.
No,
you
I know
should go.
PiecesLA.com. Get your tickets.
There you
come
go.
Come see some hot females. Say
yes
some awesome,
very hot
funny stuff.
And funny stuff, yeah, definitely. And they did some dancing, right, from what I saw in the video?
Yeah. We've got a group of professional dancers. And
oh, they were professional
they
dancers.
Oh, yeah, they're so good.
Oh,
they're so
okay
talented, yeah.
Wow. That's
yeah
a good
it's
show.
A fun time.
Yeah.
Come check it out.
Yep. All right. Well, we're going to bring in our guest. We have a very special guest in the studio. His name is Mark Greger. Welcome to the show. You'll want to get close to the mic when you talk.
Yeah. Do you mind if I actually move this a little bit?
No. Go ahead and move it.
Yeah. These seats are kind of like sitting in a dentist chair, you know, when they like kick you back. And
really?
Yeah.
We'll have to fix the thing because
yeah
this one is okay.
So
I think they have those things on the bottom of the chair. We'll fix it. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yes. So you're a career coach by profession.
Yes.
Right. And what is that? What does that entail?
So a career coach essentially works with professionals mostly who are trying to either do one of two things. Either figure out what they really want to be when they grow up,
mm-hmm,
and believe it or not, you could be 30 years into your career and still have no clue what you really want to do with your life.
That's
mm-hmm
true. Yeah, you
yeah
just kind of throw yourself into a job and you stay there.
And then life happens.
Right.
And then at some point you're like, okay, what am I really doing?
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm,
so that's one part of it. The other part of it is sometimes people know what they want. They just don't know how to make it happen.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the other part of what I do is I help people transition careers. So if you're a lawyer and you really want to open up your own restaurant, how do you strategize that? How
yeah
do you actually
especially
make that
with
happen
the times now with the economy? There's so many people that thought they had this lifelong career, you know, and all of a sudden
yeah
they get laid off. And then it's like, do I go back to school? What do I do? And it's got to be so tough.
It is. And I think it's a huge opportunity for us to reconnect with what's important in life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what we really want.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Second chance almost.
So do you find people
in disguise?
Yeah. You know, and so do you find people... I mean, do you find your business is picking up when the economy is bad? I mean, I would think, right? Because people are looking for alternatives.
Well, what's interesting is I actually I worked in corporate for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of get both sides of the equation. And I started my private coaching practice in 2010,
mm-hmm,
which was still kind of in the heart of the recession and everything.
Right, yeah.
And everyone's like, you're crazy. They're
yeah
like, no one can afford to pay for coaching at this point.
Yeah.
And I said, no, quite the opposite. Like you, to your point, you know, there's so many people who are out of work.
Mm-hmm.
They're realizing they have no job security anymore. People are starting to rethink about what are their priorities and what do they really want.
That's so true.
Right.
The timing is perfect.
That's true. But, you know, I would say it's a relatively recent idea where people feel they should get satisfaction from their work.
You know,
it didn't used to be like that. You know, you used to work for IBM for 25 years, get your gold watch, and you go home, and everybody's happy. You know, but I think in the past, maybe 50, 60, 70 years, people have decided, hey, I need to get some pleasure out of my work. I need to have a reason to get up in the morning, you know. And I remember my parents when I was young and, you know, you just start to think about work and stuff. They would say, well, it's work. It's not supposed to be fun. But you know what? For the most part, it's true. But I also find that people that do things that they love to do are more successful. Would you say that's true?
I'd absolutely agree. And I think there's a much bigger social conversation going on behind that, which is, as a society, from my perspective, we're shifting from an age of just simply surviving. And how do we put food on the table? How do we have a roof over our heads? As a society, we're shifting from that mentality more to the mentality of the inner. So it's less about the external things in our lives and more about what's going on the inside for us.
Right.
And that shift is now allowing us to come more into the space of, what do I want? What's important to me? How do I be fulfilled?
That's true, yeah. So this is interesting. So you have your own company, and it's here, but I would imagine you work with people around the country?
Around the world.
Around the world?
Yeah. I mean, most of my clients are in the U.S., but,
right.
You know, I do have some clients I work with outside the States.
That's cool.
Wow.
And when did you start the company?
I started in 2010 officially.
That's right. That's what you said.
So the
right.
official full-time coaching practice started in 2010.
Sounds cool. Wow.
And you were living here?
At that time, I was living here. I moved to L.A. in 2008.
Oh, okay. Okay. Where were you from originally?
Well, I grew up in Massachusetts. So not Boston, Western Mass. So
yeah.
That's why I don't have that funny accent. not going to say funny. But and then I lived in New York for a good number of years before I moved to L.A.
Sounds good. So where in Massachusetts did you say?
I grew up in a town called Agawam.
Agawam.
Yeah, where if you're not from the area, you have no clue what that
you
means.
You have no clue.
It's one of those.
It's a Native American name. Don't know what it means. But it's in the western part of the state near the Berkshires.
Oh, okay, cool. I don't know where that is. I've never been, but okay, if you say
not
so.
Not Boston.
All right. That's so we can tolerate sitting next to each other right now.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's a small town?
It's small town, maybe 50,000.
Oh, okay. That's pretty small, man. So. Wow.
Well, my father grew up in a town in Minnesota with 600 people.
Really?
Oh.
So let me tell you, that small town. Where I grew up was
true.
Like a city compared to that.
Oh,
so
wow,
how did he end up in Massachusetts?
Via military. He was in the military for a little bit. And then when I think he was stationed in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he got out, he went to do computer repair, computer technician. And they just basically placed him in Massachusetts to do the work.
I see. And that's where you were born, right?
That's where I was born, yeah.
I see. Wow, cool. Do you have any siblings?
I have two brothers.
Older, younger?
One older, one younger.
So you're in the middle.
I am the middle, yes.
You squeezed it. What do they say about middle kids? They're usually like the most easiest to get along with, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I
the
like
least,
that.
The least screwed up, you know? I know, you know, the firstborns, they always have problems. I'm a firstborn. I know what it's like. And because everybody expects everything out of you and stuff, and you are used to all the attention. And I don't know how, but you just get all screwed up, you know. My brother, on the other hand, you know, my middle brother, he's fine. He's mellow. He's cool and calm. And then my younger brother also, you know, has crazy things in his head also. So I don't know. But there's like entire books on birth order, you know, and it really has.
Really?
Yeah. And it really shows you how the personality can develop, you know. Because sometimes, I mean, you have kids growing in the same family, and they're so totally different, you know.
Yeah.
And so you're born with a certain personality, certain temperament, I think. And also, it's the birth order is determines how people treat you, you know. So, I mean, you know, when you're first born, you get a lot of attention.
Yeah, the I was second first born.
One, yeah.
Yeah, it's just my brother and I. There's no middle kid to like be better than either him or me. So
right.
It's just us two.
Yeah, you know. So they treat you differently. Then the second one comes and it's easier to take care of them and stuff, you know. And you may connect. And then the youngest one, usually it's the baby of the family, you know, and all that stuff. So
they're just known as the baby.
Yeah.
All the time, no matter how old they get. It's like, oh, this is the baby.
Yeah. So would you say you're the most normal of the three sons?
Well, my brothers would probably not agree, but yeah, I'll take that role. Yeah, that works.
Oh, wow. So so you grew up there. What was childhood like in that town?
Well, in the town, it was, fairly suburban upbringing. Yeah. You know, played a lot of sports. You know, it's kind of what you do in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. So I played a lot of sports. You went to school. You know, you did the things. It was a place where you could explore mm-hmm. life. You know, I grew up, my house was on the edge of a forest.
Oh, wow.
So
how cool.
It was really cool that we would have, like, this whole forest behind our, you know, and three boys. You know, you're going to go and ride bikes and, you know, do all the things boys do. So it really was a great place for exploration and adventure. And it was something that allowed me, I think, early on in my life to be in the conversation with me of mm-hmm. what I'm about. You know, cities sometimes can be very distracting.
Right.
There's
yeah.
so many things on the outside that's distracting. I really feel blessed to have lived and grew up in a space where it gave me some of my own space to explore myself.
Mm-hmm. That's cool, yeah. So did you go to college there, or did you go to college?
Yes, a little bit of college. Yeah.
Okay.
So I did
after high school. What did you do?
My undergrad. I started at Westfield State University, which was maybe about 20 minutes from where I grew up, and then I went to UMass Amherst for my last 2 years of undergrad.
Wow.
Which cool. was
That's pretty good.
And then you'd move to New York after that?
Via Connecticut. I stopped in Connecticut for a couple of years, lived in Greenwich.
Okay. What was that like? I always hear a lot about Greenwich. I don't think I've ever been, but... Yeah.
Greenwich is kind of like the Beverly Hills of the East Coast.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah. I mean, you have Diana Ross as your neighbor, Martha Stewart, and what have you. So,
okay.
Not that they were my particular neighbors. I was in an apartment, you know, with three roommates, so not as
That's quite, huh? Not quite the same, yeah.
But it was a nice place to live, for sure.
Yeah.
That was fun.
And so what did you study in school? What did you
My undergrad, I studied business administration, focus on marketing. I was one of those kids where when I graduated high school, I knew exactly what I wanted to do.
Really?
I knew I wanted, basically, at the time they didn't have it, but Mad Men. I was like, I want to run my own advertising agency on Madison Avenue.
Wow. So you already knew that.
I already knew that.
Right.
Yeah.
So are you still going to pursue that? Are you going to be on Madison Avenue one day or what?
Been there and done that.
Oh, you have
and
already?
And moved along.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about this. So you lived in Connecticut, then you moved to New York.
Then I moved to New York.
Why did you move to New York?
The company I was working with, it was a publishing company I started working with right out of school. They moved from Connecticut to the city.
Oh, okay. So you followed.
And it was a perfect fit because... part of my dream was I wanted to live and work in New York and have my business on Madison Avenue. So I'm like, oh, perfect.
Yeah, there you go.
This is the path.
Wow,
but this is your first time in the big city, right?
Yes.
So you arrive in New York, living in the big city.
My mother's
city,
from New York, so I spent much of my childhood in the city. So it was kind of almost a second home to me.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't that new and a shocker to you.
Yeah, no, not that much of a shock.
Yeah. You see, to me, even if I moved from L.A., which has a lot of people, I think if I moved to New York, it'd be a shock for me, too. And I love visiting there, but I don't know that I could live there, you know?
Yeah,
we were talking about this yesterday. I mean, it's so compact with people. I mean, my God, you know? 8 million people on that little island, you know?
But, and the weather in the winter.
And the winter.
No, thanks.
That was why I moved. Trust me. That weather in the winter, oh. The worst. You know, and I'll actually be in New York in a couple days. I go there on Saturday.
Oh, nice.
And I go back every couple months. So for me, New York is still very much of my experience of life. But I do get it now living in L.A. When I go back to New York, it's like energetically, I just have to completely shift.
Right.
To be able to work and live in that space for whatever time I'm there.
It really is very different.
Very different.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like two coasts, two big cities. They're totally different, you know. And I think when you go to New York, you realize how quiet and laid back L.A. is, you know. It's like like a cemetery here compared to New York, you know. There's so much action going on there.
It was funny. Yeah. When I left New York, everyone was like, why are you going to L.A.? Especially New Yorkers. They're like,
But you know what? Half this town is New Yorkers, it seems.
It is.
You know?
It is. Half my circle here are ex-New Yorkers.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
And the funny thing I said, I was just like, well, is, you know, I was a chapter in my life, and we could talk more about it, but I was just like, I wanted somewhere quieter, a quieter place to live. So
oh,
I was
really?
Like, L.A.
Yeah.
And it's funny, is like, if you've lived in New York, you get that. Uh-huh. But if you're not from New York, you would think L.A. is like really busy and what have you.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Until you get here. It's only busy on the freeways, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
Then everything closes at 9 o'clock here. Last night, I wanted to get something to eat. After 9 o'clock, nothing's open, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's really irritating. But, yeah, I mean, you would think a big city, you know, but it's not really, I mean, maybe it's a party town, but not like other places, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you go around the world.
It's also like, a little bit more like spread out.
Yeah.
Here.
I mean, you know, you have cities like New York, like London, Paris, you know, even Tel Aviv and stuff. It's like all night long, you know, people party and stuff. You can eat anytime you want.
Yeah.
Stuff here, there's nothing.
I know. The nightlife on the weekends shuts down at 2 a.m.
<Yeah.
laughs> Oh, okay.
I know.
I think some of the truth in that is L.A. is a very unique city. I've been to cities all over the world. And there's something about L.A. that's really, I almost want to say spiritual. And I know
really?
A lot of people
want to. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
And the spirituality of L.A. is so many people are in their own conversation. So actors. They're in their own world and focused on what they're doing.
Right.
Or those who are more on the spiritual path here, they're doing all the inner work. It isn't a very outward, external kind of energy here. So I think that is also some of the function and what happens with the social aspect of L.A.
Right.
Because everyone's a little bit more in their own world here.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and because many people come here to pursue their career, you know, everything else becomes secondary. And and they just do that and stuff. Plus, it's a spread out city, you know, so social life is not that great here because everybody lives far and you don't really run into people that much because everybody's in their cars. You don't walk and things like that. So
so at the same time, I feel like it's such a small world. Like I feel like everybody still knows everybody. It's like, wait, how do you know this person? They live like in San Diego.
That's probably because you're in entertainment and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
In entertainment, it seems to be a pretty relatively small community, you know. So everybody knows everybody, you know. And, I mean, all you have to do is friend, like, one actor on Facebook. Suddenly, you have, like, 700 common friends or something, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so people stay within their industries and stuff. And so in New York, what did you do there? I mean, that was the company that, so you finished school and then you moved?
And then I finished school, moved to Connecticut, started working with a publishing company, and then followed
publishing
that publishing company,
that's
into New
right.
York. I really loved publishing. It's such a fascinating world.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, it's so intricate, and there's so many different elements going on within that industry. Mm-hmm. And I also was there at a time, and it still is, that's going through such transformation. Mm-hmm. I was there around the time where it was kind of like things were really starting to shift to more online and electronic publishing.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like the industry was like, oh, what do we do with this? And, you know, kind of watching the music industry almost fall apart because it didn't keep up. The publishing industry was kind of like, okay, how do we not make those same mistakes?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's a big problem, you know. I mean, life is changing, habits are changing. But I don't see that for publishing. I mean, yeah, it's a big deal, but I don't think it's a big money loser for them, the idea of going digital, because you're saving on so much, you know. I mean, just think about it. It's so much more reasonable to read your newspaper or your magazine digitally, you know, on like a tablet on your iPad or something. Because, you know, when it's printed, you know, you have to deal with the ink, with the paper, with the distribution, with the printing, with the delivery, all that stuff. It's like so much just to get the news to you. And you can get it instantly, you know, the same thing. So I think now we're learning that books are actually not what you're holding in your hand, but it's the story. It's the content that you're selling. And publishing, the same thing, you know. It's not the physical thing you're holding, but the ideas behind it.
And it took me a little while to, like, get over that and start ordering books on my iPad, because I was one of those, like I like to actually physically have the books.
I know.
And collect them.
I'm the same
and
way.
And have, like, a little display of, like, oh, these are all the books
I've
read.
Yeah, exactly, and smell them, and smell the ink and the paper and stuff I love.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, a, I don't know, like, a personal, like, more, like, romantic feel to still having a paperback book, you know, but I'm like kind of in like a mid transition, like I'm half and half.
I know,
some
I'm
that
doing
I'll
it,
read
I'm doing both.
And some I'll buy through my iPad, but it has a certain charm to it still, I think.
Yeah. So the publishing industry is still adjusting to this and everything. Mm. Newsweek made the move. They stopped their print magazine. Time hasn't. But it's very interesting. I think they lost a lot of readers that way. You know, I know that they gave me like the rest of my subscription for Newsweek was like digital, right? Mm-hmm. I don't even bother. You know, I really don't. Because I like my magazines, yeah, like physically. So I don't think the stuff is going away for a while for the most part. But, I mean, bookstores are disappearing. They have disappeared. Yeah. There's nothing, mm-hmm. you know. So give us some of your opinion on this. What do you think?
Well, as someone who's worked both on the publishing end and the retail end, I worked for Barnes & Noble for a number of years.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, so I really have a really great perspective in both parts of that equation. I agree. You know, I feel like there's benefits, certainly efficiencies with digital format mm-hmm. publishing, and there's something really to be said for the tangible, being able to touch a book
right.
And yeah. visually see a book on a shelf.
Right.
And it may be generational. You know, honestly, two generations from now, the kids may be like, paper, what's that?
Right.
They mm-hmm. won't even know what the idea of paper is because everything's now going to be electronic.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's generational. I think everything evolves in its own time. And, you know, for businesses, I always say, you know, a business that tries to do everything for everyone is a business that's going to end up tumbling on itself.
Right. So you got to focus.
You want to know who you are, what mm-hmm. you do, what you're about, and stay focused on that. And that's true with business, and that's true with life.
Right.
Because how often do we spread ourselves so thin trying to be everything to everyone, mm-hmm. and meanwhile, the heart of us, our own sense of fulfillment, is completely lost in
right.
the equation.
Yeah, right. And no identity. You can't really define yourself, because what do you define yourself by if you're all things to all people?
Jack mm-hmm. of all trades.
Exactly.
Master of none.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and that's what happens. And a lot of people do that, even big corporations. They get into product lines that are not related to them. They know nothing about them, and they fail.
Yeah,
you know, because they, like you said, spread themselves too thin. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, do you find that happening quite a bit? Where
for myself?
No, not for yourself, but
all the time,
for the
actually.
Clients. That's why you're in business, right?
Well, one, so I'm in business, and it's also my own journey and my own experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say to people. There's this thing that happens when you're working with a guru or a coach or a speaker, you know, people who are just kind of looked at as like they have more wisdom or knowledge. Mm. They don't. They're humans, just like everyone else.
Right.
I'm going through my own journey as well. I'm challenged at times not to spread myself too thin. And really, who am I? What am I about? What's important to me? It's part of human experience to always be in that conversation of
mm-hmm. right.
who am I today? Because who I am today is different than who I was yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so
that's
really
true.
Being present to that, I think it's really important.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so you got into the publishing, and then what happened at that point? I mean, because you obviously ended up here.
Yeah, so I was in publishing. You know, I'm someone who I'm very efficient with what I do in my life. Uh-huh. So I basically got, within a 5-year time frame, got 4 promotions. I was running my own division.
Wow.
By the age of 23.
Very nice.
So, yeah. So I just kind of always been very good at how to work smart mm-hmm. rather than hard. So when my colleagues were working 12-hour days, I was working 8-hour days and getting more promotions than them.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, especially with business, it's really about what matters. And what matters is what matters to your manager,
right.
to your boss, because they're not looking at the stuff that they don't care about. So I always learn to focus on what matters to my manager, what matters to the business, as opposed to what are the details of the responsibilities I'm supposed to be doing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, long story short, I got a bunch of promotions and I burnt myself out in that process because I was just like, all right, I'm all in this, but is this really what I want? Mm. And as I tend to do that when I'm clear that there's a shift or a chapter turning pages, mm-hmm. I like, okay, next, what's next? And I literally left that job and started bartending.
Wow. So you're not afraid of change. I mean, you welcome it.
I don't think about it. It's kind of funny, and I can't really explain why.
You just let it happen?
It's just like if something pops in my head, I'm like, okay, let's give it a shot. And then later I'm like, oh, shoot, what did I just do?
Very spontaneous.
In a weird way, yeah. With my career, yes. With other things, no. But my career, yes.
So you became a bartender of all things.
I became a bartender just because I didn't know what I wanted to do next in my corporate, quote-unquote, professional life. Right. So I was like, eh, I like being at bars. I like happy hour, so why don't I just work in that space?
That's good. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
So did you enjoy it, actually?
I believe it or not, no.
No.
I totally had this vision of Cheers.
Yeah.
I was like, aww. I'm going to be like waiting behind the, you know, the bar and just having a conversation all day long and having a... No.
No, not quite, huh?
I worked at these places where it was so busy. Like, I was on my feet for 8 hours straight, serving hundreds of drinks. I made good money. But I was exhausted.
Yeah.
Right.
You're like a machine.
Yeah, it's just not, go, go, go. It's not like you can stop, have conversation with people.
No. And your sleep schedule is completely messed up.
Yeah.
In New York, you close your bar at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, man.
So it's not as fabulous as some people think it to be.
Right. Yeah. So you left that quickly.
I left that quickly. I was only doing that for about 6 months.
6 months or so.
And then... Okay. What I decided to do was I wanted to get back into business, but I didn't want to work for someone. So I said, let me just start my own consulting business. And that's
so you felt at that point you were knowledgeable enough to consult other people.
Yes. Yes. To the chagrin of a lot of other people who said, you're 26 years old. How are you going to start your own consulting business? What do you know?
Right.
And I was just like, well, I guess I'll find out.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
So you had your mind set on that.
Yeah.
And so is that why you moved to L.A.?
No. So you
did that back then.
Yeah,
still.
So I started a consulting business, and I started working with clients here and there, which was great, you know, just a good experience.
And then what inspired you to do that, from bartending to then wanting to...
The bartending was really just kind of a pit stop.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
I knew that wasn't from the publishing, from your other jobs, what, like, separated
it. It was moving towards that dream of the Mad Men. Mm-hmm. Madison Avenue, had my own agency, all that good stuff. So I was just kind of like, consulting, you know, I'm very opinionated. If anyone spends time with me knows that I tend to speak my mind.
Uh-huh.
And I'm usually fairly accurate when I talk about things. Doesn't mean I'm right or wrong, just there's an accuracy to it.
Right.
So I was just like, why don't I take that and take what it is that I know and I've learned. And here's the thing, I've been working since 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people can say that. By the time I finish...
I have. So I am.
Oh, so you right here. High five.
High five.
Yeah. So there's something that happens when you learn work and you learn how to be smart in your work early on in life.
Mm-hmm.
You just connect things in ways other people don't connect it.
Yeah.
And as a consultant, that's what they look for. They're looking for you to show them something that they're not seeing for themselves. So it was really a natural fit for me.
Oh, wow. So you just open up shop?
Yeah.
New York?
I jumped right in, opened a shop, said, hey guys, here's my website. This is what I do.
Right.
And just started networking.
Networking, that's how you got your clients and everything.
Yeah.
So that's the best way to do it, right? By networking, business networking.
It's a way to do it. It's a way to do it. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the best way.
Right.
It really depends on the individual.
Mm.
I always say that is like, you got to do what works for you. Just because it works for somebody else doesn't mean it's going to work for you.
Right.
If you're not a social person, forcing yourself to go out there and do networking that you hate doing,
right, won't work.
It's not going to give you the same results as someone who loves doing that.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly. So what are some other ways that people can, they open up a business, what are some of the ways people, you recommend for people to get clients? I guess it depends on the business, right?
Well, yeah, it depends on the business.
Yeah.
I mean, it hugely depends on the business, about a million factors.
But it depends on the businessman or woman, the entrepreneur. It depends on them too, right? Because I know, like with the radio station here, I've done just about anything you can do with it as far as contributing to it. But at the same time, there are things that I don't know. You know, I'm not great at sales, never have been, so I don't enjoy it. So that's a part where I could improve, for example. So I would imagine, you know, when you start a business and you're on your own, maybe a couple people and stuff, you have to, I think, realize that you can't do everything,
yep.
Right?
Well, one, you physically can't, so it's impossible even if you tell yourself you can. And two, it doesn't work. And it's not beneficial to the business.
Right.
Here's the thing. I have an 80-20 rule. There's a lot of 80-20 rules out there.
Yeah.
My version of it, for regards to running a business, is you should be spending 80% of your time doing what you are naturally talented and enjoy doing. Mm. 20% doing the stuff where it's like, okay, I want to be better at this particular thing, but it's not what I'm natural for. That should be the balance. Anytime that you're not in that 80-20 percentage, you want to stop and take a look and say, is this really what's working? Mm-hmm. And most, I would say, good 90% of entrepreneurs, especially small business entrepreneurs, are completely flipped, head over heels on that percentage. Wow. 80% of the time, they're doing stuff they don't like to do that's not natural for them, but they're forcing themselves to do it because they don't know how else to get it done.
Right.
And only 20% of the time doing what they're naturally talented to do.
Right. And then that's where the, I think the big issue comes in when you have to hire people. And so in essence, you're hiring someone to do something that you can't do, then you probably can't even train them to do it, you know? So it creates a problem as far as trusting people and connecting with the right people.
Tell me more about that, trusting. That word was like so triggered for me. What's the trusting part?
Well, the trusting part meaning that, like if you have an important part of your business that you need to take care of and you can't, you don't even know how. Mm. Okay, let's say accounting, for example, right? So then you have to hire someone. Now, accounting is a pretty sensitive thing, you know, and you don't want everybody to look into your books and stuff. That's where I think the trust comes in. How do you find people that you can trust? Or maybe you can't, but how do you learn to trust people that you hire?
Mm. Okay, so yeah, a few quick things here. One, referrals.
Right.
So find the people that you trust and ask them to give you referrals. Because people you trust are giving you referrals, there's an extra level of trust that's going to be part of the equation.
Right, except when they don't know the person they're recommending is a fool.
Yes.
You know, this happened to me several times. You know, somebody recommended, a friend recommended an accountant. I went there. I had a bad experience. And then that friend later found out that he had a bad experience too. So, sometimes it doesn't work.
That's called
referrals.
Life.
Yeah, I guess.
That's called life. There are no guarantees. Yeah. So it's a way to give a little bit more assurance, but absolutely, you could have a bad experience with any referral. The second thing is intuition. One thing I do whenever I meet someone is I take a moment of not talking, and I really just presence myself to their energy. What is just instinctually coming up for me about this person? Does it feel good, or does something not necessarily feel bad, but does something feel off?
Right.
Right. Oh, yeah, intuition says a lot.
A lot. As human beings, intuition is what we all naturally have, but we're not taught how to access it or use it.
Right. No, that's very true.
Yeah. So intuition is a huge aspect of that equation. And then the final part, this is the other mistake people tend to do, is like, oh, I got an accountant, and they just hand everything off to the accountant, and then they don't look at it anymore. Mm-hmm. And they're just like out of mind, out of sight.
Right.
And then later on, something happens where their account took, $100,000 from them, and they're, like, all upset.
Right.
And I'm like, well, you basically put out the energy, like, I don't care about accounting or my finances. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the universe is like, okay, you don't care about your money, so your money's going to go somewhere, and so be
into
it.
Into the accountant's pocket,
Yeah, so as a business owner, the 80-20 rule is that 20% of the time should be the part of, like, making sure you understand enough of the things that you're not actually managing yourself to be able to know, are they doing their job relatively at the level they should be?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to know something about it. I mean, you hire somebody that does accounting, you know nothing about accounting, you don't know if they're doing their job or not. You don't know if they're doing it right or not.
Right.
You know, so I can
scary.
See. I can see where that comes in. Now, so that's business. Let's talk about career for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. In the last few minutes we have, what are some of the recommendations? I mean, you said, some people like later on in their life, wake up one day and decide that's not what I want to do. I want to change a career. That sounds like a pretty hard thing to do. How do you see that? I mean, how does a person go about changing a career?
Well, first and foremost, they have to get clear that they actually want to change their career. Mm. Most people can't even get to that point.
Yeah.
Or,
are they afraid, or is that what it is?
There's just a lack of consciousness around what's important to them. One of the first things I ask my clients is, like, what are your values? And usually I get a big blank question mark on their face, like, huh, values? What do you mean? What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
they're like, you know, what is my net worth? No, no.
No.
It's like, what's important to you? Yeah. It is like friendship important to you is having trust, being confident, being empowered. Like, what are the things that are important to you? And most people don't ever think about this.
Because right.
They're so wrapped up in their life just trying to keep their head above water.
Exactly. Yeah, I think people are so concerned about, you know, like the outside world and what's on outside rather than going inside and really viewing it. Like, yeah, what do I truly value? And this is something, this is very inspirational to me because I feel like this is something I really need to think about. Like, I'm going to go home tonight and be like, all right, like, what do I really value? Like, this is all really good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I have clients who come to me when they're just out of college and say, like, okay, I still don't know what I want. Mm-hmm. And I have 60-year-olds who are at the end of their career, and they're just like, I still want to figure out what I want to do.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, all right, so let's talk about it. Because it's only ever a conversation about feeling fulfilled. And it doesn't make a difference if it's regard to your business, your career, relationship. The experience and the conversation is always about, I just want to feel satisfied and fulfilled.
Right.
And that my life had some purpose and meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you spend so much time at work, you know, I mean, it better be pleasant for you. It better be a place where you enjoy going to every day or you're going to be a miserable person.
Yeah.
I know I used to, you know, I used to do things I didn't like to do and I was miserable. I don't even know how I got up in the morning every day, you know.
Yeah.
So, like you said, to get some satisfaction from it is very important, I think, you know. So people like will change careers sometimes like drastically, right, into something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, how do you go about this? You know, if somebody wants to, obviously you need new training and maybe even go back to school and stuff. How do people manage that while they still keep their job?
Yeah, so really good point, because a lot of people think like it's throw the, you know, baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
If I'm switching careers, it's like, oh, I got to jump fully in.
Right.
You can do it that way, and there's nothing wrong with it. And another way to do it is to strategize.
Right.
To look at, one, finances, which is usually the biggest conversation of like, you know, my money, how I'm going to shift this. You want to strategize your finances to make sure you have enough of financial stability to do the transition. And you also, most importantly, this is the biggest thing people forget, is open your mouth and start talking to people, because we have all these conversations of our head of maybe things that we think about doing, dream of doing, want to do, and we think we're talking them out loud and everyone in our life knows about them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And no one knows about it.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second you start talking with people, you'll be surprised. People will get in the game and get excited for you and want to help you.
That's true. You know, and I know many times it's like, you know, I used to be like afraid to talk to someone or say something to them. And then once you muster up the courage, you see they're like the easiest people to talk to, you know. So it's like what's in our minds, I think, is usually wrong about what people think about us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I really do. Tell us how people can find you, how people can use your services, what it is that you provide.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll give the website out, too.
Okay. So people can find me. I'll give the website now. It's madisondsolutions.com, and that's D as in David. That's how they can find me. In terms of what it is that I do a variety of primarily career coaching, but also business coaching for those who are kind of interested in building or growing their own business. The work I do really primarily is about helping people shift from this doubt and this fear and this worry about like, oh, I just don't know where to go from here. I know something isn't working. I know there's something else out there. I just don't know how to do that transition.
Mm.
That's where a coach is so powerful.
Really?
And the reason for that is what a coach does is it gives you access to your blind spots in life. You think about it. You know, you're driving down your road and you got your rearview mirror. Maybe you got your Hello Kitty rearview mirror. And it's really big.
Yeah.
And there still is blind spots. Somewhere in your path, somewhere around you, there are things you can't see.
Mm.
A coach gives you the right mirror and the right reflection to see those things that you're not seeing right now.
Mm.
And those things are what gives you access to your clarity and to where do you go from here?
Mm.
What is the next step? People always say, I don't know. And then I'm like, okay, so let's just have a conversation about what you don't know. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I actually do know. I just couldn't see it before.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's true, I guess. You know, it's like going to a therapist or something in the same way. You know, they make you see things you wouldn't see yourself, you know,
right.
that either because you purposely don't want to see them or you truly don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know?
And here's a really good distinction. People always ask this. What's the difference between coaching and therapy?
Mm-hmm.
Coaching is all about the present and moving forward.
Mm.
Therapy more focuses on what happened in your past.
That's true.
And it's serving. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but it, more of the conversations, what happened in your past, and get really cool distinctions and insights around that.
Right.
But you rarely do anything with that. It's just cool insights. Mm. Coaching's about what's going on for you today. Great, you got stuff in your past. What's going on for you today, and what are you doing with that to actually move you forward towards what you want in life?
Mm.
Right.
Sounds good. Well, we are out of time, Mark. Thank you so much for joining us. Check Mark Greger out at MadisonDSolutions.com, and there's a list of all the services and how you can contact and everything. It even explains what exactly is coaching, which sounds good. And thank you, Mark, again. All the best to you.
Thank you.
And thanks, Mia, as always.
Thank you.
We'll see everybody tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning, which airs Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you would like to get in touch with the show or to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please email sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.